You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Well, welcome to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I'm Gary Bauer. This is the weekly podcast of the James Dobson Family Institute. Dr. Dobson and I have worked together for decades, and I'm honored and proud to be working with him right now as Senior Vice President of Public Policy. And we're glad that you're here because there's so much going on in our country. There's so much going on in the church. I think everybody agrees that these are perilous times, and it's important that Christians be involved. I was talking to a friend the other day, a young man that I've known for quite a while. He had just finished driving across the Midwest of the United States. He was on his way to Indiana, and we saw each other a few days ago, and he seemed a little troubled. I asked him what was wrong, and he said, "You know, Gary, I drove across a number of states," and he said, I just couldn't believe the things I was seeing." And he said, "At the end of the trip, I had to sadly reach the conclusion that America is broken." And it was kind of a jarring phrase. I said, "Well, tell me a little bit more. What are you referring to?" And he goes, "Well, you know, I've seen all the newspaper articles about the problems in the country, but I'm driving along. I'm seeing these problems right outside the car window. You know, I'm driving through Midwestern cities," and he goes, "Gary, the streets are filled with hundreds, sometimes thousands, of what euphemistically are being called homeless people." But he said, "It was so obvious. These were, by and large, mentally disturbed people. They, you know, clearly they were suffering from a number of disorders." He said, "I'd stop at a red light and I'd see people openly shooting up with drugs right on a street corner." And he said, "I don't even want to describe the things I saw people doing on sidewalks, various bodily functions." I mean, the sort of thing that in our minds we tend to think of as something that would happen in a third world country, not the United States of America. And, you know, the very fact that, and he pointed this out, the very fact that we call this a homeless problem, it's not a homeless problem. And these people are wrestling with so many deep problems. If you gave them a home, they wouldn't be able to manage the home because they're unable to manage their own lives. Now, look, we've spent billions of dollars on this. I think New York City, I just saw this the other day, has spent over $1 billion in the last year or so to deal with this problem of street people who are not only suffering in many ways, but often they are attacking other citizens. They're hurting businesses right here in Washington, D.C., in the capital of the United States. There are encampments a couple of blocks from the White House, from the Congress, from the Supreme Court. There are encampments in the parks all over Washington, D.C. that are historic sites. Tourists are stepping over bodies. And everybody just shrugs like this is something that nothing can be done about. But our cities are broken. The crime rate is going sky high. There is not a city in America that is able to find an adequate number of police officers to try to manage this crime problem. Urban America, the cities of America, are broken. They're broken. And we're not even talking about it in a realistic way in our politics. My friend said that he's sort of a student of history, and he often drives rather than flies to various places. And he said, I was getting close to Illinois, and he said, "I always love crossing the state boundary into Illinois because the first thing you see is this big sign that says, 'Illinois, land of Lincoln.'" But he said this, during this drive, he said, "I don't know." He said, "Maybe I was distracted. I didn't see that sign. He said the first sign I saw was a huge sign. It looked like it was put up by the state that said, Illinois, land of legal abortion. Now, my friends, you could write the chapter of a book called The Decline and Fall of America just on that little vignette. That a state that used to brag about them being the home of Lincoln, who was, after all, the president that argued that all men and women have dignity and value and worth, no matter what the color of their skin is or how much money they have in the bank, because they've been made in the image of God. And now that same state brags that you can abort your baby any month of the pregnancy? Is that really what the people of Illinois think is progress? I just started going through all the things in America we've taken for granted. Our healthcare system, the healthcare system in America is broken. I mean, not only are expenses out of control in spite of all the government programs, but you probably know what Western healthcare in Europe and the United States and most of the Western world has been built on. It's the Hippocratic Oath, which says, first, do no harm. It's an ethical standard that doctors, nurses, medical personnel, when they're dealing with a patient, somebody that is ill or that may be ill, the first thing you have to make sure you follow is don't prescribe anything, don't do anything to this person where you're actually making it worse, you're harming them. That's been thrown overboard by American medicine. We have a good bit of the medical establishment arguing for abortion on demand. People in American healthcare that want to force Christian doctors that have moral objections to abortion to be implicated in abortion by prohibiting those doctors from getting various licenses unless they agree to do abortions. We've got this new phenomenon of transgenderism. A lot of research on this. This phenomenon has been out there for a while, but it's been very rare. This phenomenon has been out there for a while, but it's been very rare. Now there's an explosion of it, and there's some evidence, significant evidence, that it might be caused by the cultural influences, social media, and so forth. So doctors, the medical establishment should be very careful about a child, particularly a 7, an 8, a 9, an 11-year-old coming in to the doctor with their parents and saying, I've been born in the wrong body. But instead, in some of the greatest hospitals America has to offer, they have opened up transgender centers where they are doing thousands of procedures that mutilate the bodies of little children, as well as giving those children powerful drugs that are likely to sterilize them if they change their minds later. This is outrageous. But those that speak up against it are excoriated. They're called haters. The president of the United States is promoting this transgender insanity, and the medical establishment appears to have completely embraced it. But it's not just that. You know, there's a shortage of doctors and nurses. Some of that's caused by COVID, but a lot of doctors and nurses quit because they can't take the things that are happening in American medicine right now. And if that wasn't enough, millions of Americans in the last year or so have periodically been unable to get the medications they need. Do you know why? Because about 85% of American medications are manufactured in communist China. Really, how did that happen? How did a nation that's supposed to be one of the brightest, smartest nations in the world, our leaders always brag about how on top of things they are, did no one in the last couple of decades think it might be a bad idea for people in the United States that are ill to depend on medication that's being made in a country that is built on communism and may very well be one of the major enemies we have to deal with in the years ahead? Did no one think that was a bad idea? American education is broken. My goodness, it would take hours to describe how broken American education is. It breaks my heart because I was Undersecretary of Education under Ronald Reagan. We emphasized excellence during those years, raising children up in our schools. Now we're discovering that there are schools in which not one student in the entire school can test out in math or reading or writing at the grade level they are in. And so what is the reaction of the educational establishment to this? If there are students doing well, they try to pull those students down in the name of equity, instead of rising up, raising up the other students to the level of proficiency. We are spending more money on American education than we have ever spent per pupil in the history of the United States. Depending on the estimates right here in Washington, D.C., in the nation's capital, the figure is something between $18,000 and $20,000 a year per student. You could buy a private education for that. And yet schools in the capital of the United States of America, school after school, are failing the children that parents have entrusted to those schools. The American family is failing. Every year, more and more children go home to houses with no father in the home. No nation in the history of the world has ever tried a social experiment like the one we are in right now. And by every measurement, it is failing, and nobody wants to debate it. Nobody is running for office saying, one of the big things I want to do if you elect me is revisit this experiment in which we are allowing so many of our children to be deprived of two parents, a mother and a father. Why aren't we debating that? Because our politicians are cowards and they're afraid to bring it up. They're afraid that it might go in the face of cultural trends. Do I need to get started about the American media? Broken is an understatement. The American media is supposed to be the bringer of truth, of news. The editorial pages of newspapers are supposed to be reserved for opinion. But you're supposed to be able to read a news story and have confidence that it's the actual events that happen. My friends, a week does not go by that I do not see an actual event, or that I'm not actually part of an event here in Washington, that when I read the news account of it the next day, I don't recognize the event that I was part of. Literally, in the Washington Post, maybe one of the most important newspapers in America, there is not one article from the front page to the sports page to the TV page that is not filled with articles, every one of which is promoting a political viewpoint. And we saw just in the last couple of days a very well-researched report that indicates the whole charge that the media promoted for 3 years, that somehow President Trump had colluded with Russia during the 2016 campaign, in fact, was a hoax. And not one newspaper has apologized. So you just look anywhere. America was supposed to be a shining city on a hill. That's what the founding fathers called it. And if you know your Bible, you know that's a biblical reference. It's sort of an oblique reference to Jerusalem, the Jerusalem of the Bible, and the Jerusalem we believe will still come in the future. A shining city on a hill? We're becoming Babylon. So the question that those of us at JDFI are constantly asking, the question that Dr. James Dobson has asked for decades of you and the Christian church in America, is given that we are surrounded by all of this suffering, of all of these failures, of all of this decay, and quite frankly, in many cases, decadence, what are Christians called to do in a broken country? Do we have any obligation whatsoever here? Now, there are some in the church who say, look, that's all politics. You just need to go to church every Sunday and pray and worship, and certainly that is something we heartily endorse. But that's it. Pray and worship, some of these church leaders say, and then go back home and don't bring all this stuff into the church. It has nothing to do with us. And then there are some other church leaders, and they look at all of this, and they see the growing Christian hostility in America, and their solution is, let's water down the gospel because we're offending people. Here's a good idea, some of them say. Let's hang an LGBTQ flag outside the church. That'll signal that we're not some of those Christians that judge everybody. Really? That's what the body of Christ is called to do in America at a time like this? Here at JDFI, Dr. James Dobson makes it clear in everything he writes and says that America's problems cannot be solved without Christians in America being part of the conversation. It is inconceivable America will solve these problems without you and me. And so failing to be part of the conversation, failing to be doing anything, is just unacceptable. And if you still think that that's an acceptable thing to do, I want you to contact me and tell me what Bible verses you're relying on. I'll pass them right on to Dr. Dobson. The Bible is full of the exact opposite of men and women that took the risk of advising the kings and queens of their age and told those leaders things they did not want to hear. And those early believers paid a terrible price. So, my friends, the message this week is simple. You want to solve racial reconciliation in America? Talk to Christians, because we have the answer. The answer to racial reconciliation is the realization that every one of us, black, white, whatever, Asian, Hispanic, we've all been made in the image of God. We all have dignity, value, and worth. You want to save America's children? We have the answer. It's biblically based. Children need mothers and fathers. That's how God made the world. You want to solve the problem of corruption in every institution in America? Just hang up the Ten Commandments on a wall in every institution. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not lie. The problems of America will not be solved without you and without me. We have to look to the Apostle Paul, who in his time said, I will fight the good fight. I will keep the faith. I will finish the race. And that's exactly what we must do. Go to the school board meetings, register to vote, run for office yourself if you've got a strong heart and can take all the things that comes with that. Use the dinner table to teach your children to love the things you love and to honor the things you honor. Support the James Dobson Family Institute, because this team here is working harder than any group of people I have seen in my entire life, including in the 8 years I spent with Ronald Reagan in the White House and the Department of Education. And every night, get on your knees and pray that America will be given another chance by the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Jesus. Well, that's my message, my friends. I hope you listen to it a couple of times, show it to your friends, show it to your family. And I'm looking forward to seeing you next week as we talk more about how you can, how you must be part of the solution. God bless you. See you then.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.